Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very, very accomplished author and someone who's leading, doing some very, very interesting things, Aviva Wittenberg-Cox from the UK, and she's currently in Dakar, Senegal. Aviva, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Lovely to be with you this morning.
Thank you. Aviva is the Chief Executive Officer of 21st, a global consulting firm working with companies interested in capturing the competitive advantage of gender, nationality, and generational balance. She has been named amongst the top 40 women leading change by the Elle magazine. She's received a Lifetime Achievement Award for Gender Balanced Leadership by PWN Global. And as a lot of you know, I'm very partial to authors. She's an author with a book titled Why Women Mean Business. And I'm sure they always do mean business. So Aviva, let's first talk about 21st. Tell me about this venture and the meaning of the name.
So 21st is a consulting company that I founded, 15 years ago now. The name is based in the idea that we're helping companies move from the 20th century to the 21st century while keeping them first. And the idea is to keep ahead of global trends. And so what we've been looking at is nationality balance because of globalization, gender balance because of the rise of women all over the world, and increasingly generational balance as populations age and birth rates fall again all over the world.
Well said. So, gender inequality and women empowerment is a challenge all over the world. And you just stated that yourself. What are some of the key challenges that need to be addressed and how are you doing this?
I think one of the key issues to be addressed is to flip the frame and to see that actually women who are now 60% of university graduates all over the world are a huge talent and economic opportunity. So it's not so much a question anymore, I think, of seeing them as they're often framed, right, as poor victims, but instead as levers to our shared performance, whether it's economic, social, or political. Gender-balanced organizations perform better. They have better bottom-line results. Talent is on the rise. And any company, small or large, that wants to perform, one of the quickest ways to accelerate that is to gender balance.
I agree with you completely, but your comment about 60% women being being educated and more than certainly men, is there a comment that is from the developed world? Because I see a lot of imbalance from the world that I come from, whether it's India, South Asia, Southeast Asia, East Asia, the Middle East, Africa.
Keep in touch with the data. So India has been rising and changing very fast over the course of my career. Now the stats coming out of India look actually very balanced. We've done the world has done a relatively good job on a huge push that's been the last couple of decades of educating women, which is in part why birth rates are falling, including in India, by the way, where it's had a very dramatic drop. As soon as women are educated, birth rates fall, and women can work more effectively in the workplace. And no, graduation levels in India look about 50-50 right now, male and female. And interestingly, in some of the tech firms, India is very specific here compared to the rest of the world. India has much higher rates of women in STEM fields, which is a real opportunity for them all over the world, because global companies in STEM want more women. So I'm always telling them, go to India. That's where you'll get great female talent.
That's a fantastic comment that you've just made, because I think a lot of people in India don't like to believe a lot of these numbers, but I completely agree with what you're saying. And there's also a general view that if you educate a woman, you educate a family, which is seems to be coming true in India.
And if you educate a woman, you give a lot of financial security to your own family, because the whole world doesn't rely on your shoulders alone. So yes, it's a good strategy for home and business.
Correct. Absolutely right. So, you know, when I was reading about you, Aviva, there was an interesting phrase that came up, that you check if managers' products and services are gender bilingual and inclusive across generations. Help me understand this comment and give me an example if possible.
So gender bilingual means that it's very much like cross-cultural issues, right? We've spent, and India is very good at this, right? Decades now learning how to talk across cultures and sell products and develop services that work globally. Gender is a little bit the same. A lot of the products and services that were developed were based on male models. So if I give you an example, it would be perhaps health. So let's look at heart disease. Heart disease has always been seen to be a male issue for a long time. Most of the research on cardiac arrest was done on male rats, male mice, and then men, because women are a little bit more complicated to do research on. And yet today we know that the number one killer of women in many countries is heart disease. Why? Because the symptoms that they display are completely different than the symptoms men display, so that they are constantly misdiagnosed, underdiagnosed, and sent home with pain relief when what they really need is much deeper interventions. So that's what I mean by gender bilingual. If you are not aware of differences between men and women in their tastes, in their symptoms, in their preferences. It's just the same for the financial services industry, which women don't trust very much. If you don't know how to talk to women, what motivates them, what attracts them to choose your products, services, or businesses, you're not going to get them. You're not going to attract them as talent. You're not going to retain them, and you're not going to learn how to develop them. So becoming gender bilingual is being as comfortable working with and talking with and interacting with women as you are with your existing populations.
Wow. That's an amazing insight you've given me. You know, I had no idea that there was such a big difference in, say, the treatment to heart challenges that we all have.
It's the same in automotive. It's the same in almost any sector. All the car research is done with very large dummies that are the height and size of men. So women in car accidents tend to get much more damaged because the entire safety system is designed for much larger bodies than your average female, except for Volvo, who's done a lot of work on adapting their cars to women. So yes, if you haven't actually thought through all of your processes, systems, and corporate cultures to adapt them to a more gender balanced workforce and customer base, your company tends to default to a very masculine norm.
But, you know, what you're saying is so incredible. Is there work being done to start changing this at the large corporate level?
Yes, I've been working on this for 20 years. So a lot of companies have moved. It's the easiest way to see if a company is moving in this direction is just look at the executive team, leadership team, the board. These are all published. We publish a lot of these rankings on our website. There are more and more of them. If the team is completely dominated by men, you know that this organization has not yet started on this journey. There are laggards, but most of the good companies have started to move very fast. I've done some work for some very interesting Indian companies that are moving very quickly on this. And I think they see very quickly an uptick in performance, so much so that investors, large investors like BlackRock and L&G, have publicly stated in the last couple of years they will no longer invest their funds in companies that aren't gender balancing their leadership teams.
Wow.
Follow the money.
Absolutely.
It's coming.
Absolutely. But Aviva, there is another big challenge that I've seen in a large part of the world, and I'm not certain if that's the case in the developed world. But though there is a balance at the entry level and in you know, till the time a woman is at 29, 30, whatever. The moment she starts a family, there is a big gap. And then her re-entry in the workforce is becoming a challenge. And I was talking to some senior women leaders, and they said that the pandemic has helped this significantly. I'd love to get your perspective.
My perspective is that, and I've written quite a lot about this. I have a book called Four Phases of Women's Careers. Mm-hmm. It is that companies and the way they develop talent mm-hmm. has been normed on male careers, and not only male careers, obsolete male careers when men had a wife who stayed home and didn't work. Mm. And this kind of up or out, very linear career pattern has been obsolete for a long time. COVID and the pandemic has now even kicked it further out of the ballpark. But women's careers are a different shape. Mm-hmm. And if companies put all of their focus, as many of them still do, on the 30s as this moment of acceleration and increase of pressure and responsibility, and that that is the only career pattern that is recognized and allowed, they are very likely to suffer from retention issues and a lack of being able to promote women. Mm-hmm. Women will need flexibility. Generally, the 30s, I know many of your listeners are in their 30s. 30s is the absolutely worst decade for women to be under so much pressure, as it is for any young parent. Mm-hmm. Increasingly, mm-hmm. we're seeing shared parenting and shared parental leave is becoming a huge phenomenon across many countries, so that the shape of careers needs to change. And since lives, I'm getting into my other topic of longevity, mm-hmm. since careers are stretching from 30-year sprints to 50-year or more marathons, the issue that we need a bit of flexibility in the 30s mm-hmm. should not be a career maker or breaker as it currently is. So to all your listeners who may be suffering from this absurd, obsolete pressure in their 30s, relax, life is long, you'll be living to be 100, pace yourself, and realize that, yeah, you can have kids and still get back into the workforce, or not leave it entirely and still have a stellar career. I think women's best career years are likely to be the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Watch this space, it's already emerging.
Wow, that's an amazing comment. So another perspective I wanted to get from you is that, what is the reason for a lot of this inequality? Is it the society, culture, or just simply elders, or as you say, obsolete men?
Obsolete women too. I mean, men and women share a lot of the stereotypes that are holding us back. It's, you know, thousands and thousands of years of human history, right? I again invite you to flip the switch. Mm-hmm. The most extraordinary transformation we have had in the 20th century, I would suggest, is not getting to the moon. It's being able to control our wombs. Mm. So birth control has been the huge flip that has enabled half the population to be educated and work basically for the first time in human history. So we're in the middle of a very large human experiment that's gone, I would suggest, again, remarkably quickly. India is a really interesting example. How fast can a big country like India change? Look at the educational rates of women and how they are emerging. What's holding them back is what always holds progress and change back. It's the way we used to do things. It's the culture we used to have. This is a Pandora's box, right? Mm. Once you educate women and open the ability to navigate their lives and work, I don't think you'll be going backwards anytime soon. And these falling birth rates that we're seeing all over the world, including now South Korea, that's gone down below one, is an indication that, you know, women will be voting with their wombs. Give them money and control, and watch what happens. And if you resist those changes, you're just losing performance and opportunity.
And how does culture, you know, and culture is a huge driver in virtually everything that we see or do in all parts of our world. How does culture impact this inequality?
Hugely. I mean, the national cultures, religious cultures overlap totally. Religion, usually, if you go to the root of it, is actually very gender equal. The way it's been interpreted and preached has been very much dominated by men. I think religion is slow to change.
Right.
Once they're in control, why would they shift? But again, I think culture changes quicker than we expect. So if you look around the world and you see how much has changed on the gender topic over our lifetimes, Ashutosh, you and me, we've watched it. We are the tipping point generation. Another couple of generations, I don't see that it will go backward. I think education was the key tipping point. Education and birth control are the two issues that have flipped the switch. So culture can play with those things. In some countries, it's still very hard to get birth control through. But otherwise, I think the fall in birth rates, having less children and being in work has really changed the power of women almost everywhere. And that will impact and help cultures evolve.
Fascinating. So one more question about relating 21st before I move to your book. This is about the young people, the millennials, the Gen Zs, who have now inherited the world. And I'm very confident that they will make the world a much better place from the mess that my generation is going to be leaving behind. I'd love to understand from you, how are millennials and Gen Zs reacting or changing the balance of in the genders?
Well, many of them in some countries or cities would argue that we are now post-gender, that gender is a completely constructed thing, that it's, you know, we're well beyond the binary. There's all kinds of changes going on. For most of the world, I think we're still trying to deal with men and women and the rise of women and the adaptation of men to that rise and the resistances and backlashes that we can see, which I think is feeding populisms and strong men all over the world to get back to what we knew. So I think you will probably see in the next generation what you saw in our generation. There's usually two different forces at play, one moving forward and pushing on more balance, more empowerment of more different kinds of people, and one going backwards, pushing very much backwards, back to how things were in the good old days when men dominated and women didn't work, and send them back home. Our societies will play out along that fight in all different kinds of ways, and many people will see that this issue of gender and women in particular, it's just the canary in the coal mine. We can go backwards very fast. It's democracies and progress are always a fragile thing. I think we've never seen that more clearly than right now. And I think the fate of women will be actually the fate of all of us.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you completely. In fact, you know, in many companies that I have either founded or led, I've always said that women have a much, much stronger work ethic than any of my male colleagues. And I've always said this openly on my shows as well. So thank you. This is amazing.
I don't go there, actually. I don't usually say that women are better than men in any way. I think that men and women together are far stronger than either gender on their own.
I agree. That's a very politically correct comment, but I'm saying I say so. But let's move on to your book now. Let's talk about your book, Why Women Mean Business. Tell me about your book and your hypothesis.
Well, I've got quite a few books, and that was my first book that I wrote quite a ways back now. Okay. And the hypothesis of it was this reframing that women are not a problem. They're not a protected, poor little victim group that we need to save. Mm. They are the future of our shared humanity, economically, right, politically, and socially. If we want to create a better world, a more high-performing, caring, just world, we would be smart to leverage 50% of the brains and talents on this planet. Mm-hmm. They happen now to be the most educated group as well. And so the whole idea of that book was to prove that women are an economic and social resource that we are underutilizing.
Correct.
We spent a lot of time and money developing them and educating them. Mm-hmm. The moment now is to translate that investment into really leveraging their skills for the future, mm-hmm, which we're in the midst of. It's coming.
Oh, absolutely. But tell me a little bit about your other books, and which is your latest book?
So my latest book is Seven Steps to Leading a Gender Balanced Business, which was written very much for business leaders who still are majority male, mm-hmm, on what is it and how can they view this topic? What is their role? Because I think basically gender balancing business now is mostly in the hands of men, right? This is mostly about men learning how to lead more gender balanced workplaces and connect with more gender balanced customers.
True.
And becoming really this kind of gender bilingual leader I was talking about. And that skill is still quite rare. And so that's, I think, what we need to build increasingly in the world is managers, whether they're male or female, by the way, who really understand how to work and get the best out of all genders.
Mm.
Still a challenge.
I agree. So I have time for one more question. And I'm trying to figure out what I should ask you. But let me ask you this question about your latest book on the seven steps. Is it possible for you to tell me what are the seven steps?
Let me give you a short form, which would be there are always three pillars to gender balancing large organizations or small ones. Mm-hmm. It's leadership, culture, and systems.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to get leaders skilled and aligned on what this topic is all about, that it's actually not a nice to have sort of ethical, moral tick the box exercise. Mm-hmm. It's actually a fundamental performance lever for their business and their mm-hmm. customers. Culture is about getting an entire organization aligned with those ideas mm-hmm. and making sure that the workplace is conducive to having everybody thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And systems is all the systems that underlie everything. There's a lot of systemics that block and are obstacles mm-hmm. to gender balance, whether it's the kind of career progression that we were talking about earlier, whether it's how you identify leadership potential, how you do your recruitment advertising and how male or female oriented it is, to all the way to your customer advertising. Most advertising that we review is not very gender bilingual, right? It's aimed and codified on male values, you know, buy this widget so that you can be bigger, stronger, faster, more wonderful. Those are not the sort of languages or connections that work with the female half of the population. So adapting organizations is kind of broad-based effort that takes leadership, culture, and systems.
Incredible. Aviva, on that note, thank you very much. It was such a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for talking to me in so much detail about the gender inequality, the gender balance. I completely agree with everything that you've commented, because I've said 50% of the population needs to come as strongly back into the workforce, if I can say so, or be an equal partner in developing the economy, the country, the family, the society, the community. So, you know, I think I've learned a lot of new things from you today. including small little things that you just so simply pointed out about challenges of the heart or automobiles not planning to, you know, work with women models, if I can use that term, while they are testing their cars. I must reach out to and get some of your books, and I'm sure a lot of my viewers and listeners will also look out for you. Thank you again and good luck.
My good, great pleasure. It was lovely to be talking with you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.